Hey everybody, Rachel here with a cold open before we jump into today's podcast. First of all, the audio on this podcast is going to sound weird, particularly on my end of things, because I had a problem with my microphone and had to use the audio from our Zoom recording. Sorry about that, it's just how it is sometimes. Secondly, just as a content warning, this episode of the podcast will contain frank discussions surrounding mental health and mental illness. Thank you so much for listening. It's been really great to see all of this lovely, sweet, incredible support since the podcast launched, and I'm really grateful for everyone that's tuned in. All right, without further ado, here's this week's episode of The Rehearsal Report. Beautiful people, and welcome back to The Rehearsal Report. Our guest today is Corinne Jenny Esty, and she is here to help us dig into how theater can be used not just to entertain, but also to heal. Corinne is a Connecticut-based theater artist and recreational professional, working mainly as a director, a playwright, and a stage manager, but she still occasionally performs as an actor and a singer-songwriter. Corinne works as the event coordinator at ArtReach, Inc., a nonprofit arts organization that provides visual arts, music, and theater opportunities to adults living with diagnosed mental illness, and they're most known for their sketch comedy troupe, The Second Step Players, which Corinne assists in writing, directing, and stage managing. And her work largely focuses on how both individuals and communities can overcome trauma. Corinne, thank you so much for joining us today. How are you?
Thank you for having me. I'm doing well, thanks.
All right, so since this is a theater podcast and we both went to theater school, you know that we have to start out with an icebreaker.
Amazing.
So I'm going to start with, what is your favorite color?
Lavender.
Ooh, interesting choice. What was the last thing you ate today?
Toast. Very boring.
Yeah, it is quite early in the morning when we're recording this. And finally, I'd like you to tell me a story about the closest object to you.
Oh, well, I'd say it's this microphone.
It's very snazzy.
Yeah, so I'm sitting in front of a microphone it's not a vintage microphone, but it's a vintage style microphone. And I got this for Christmas from my father 2 years ago. And this is actually the first time it's being used for something that'll actually go anywhere. So that's kind of fun. I didn't get it set up before the pandemic, so I've never performed with this mic or anything. So it's kind of nice.
Cool. For your debut for your new microphone. Love
Absolutely.
It. All right. So we'll get a bit into your formal education later, but we're gonna start at the very beginning, because right. I've heard that's a very good place to start. So we'll get into a bit of your tragic backstory, if you will. So how did you first become involved in theater? Like, were you a performer when you were little? Like, when did everything start for you?
Yeah, it started at a very young age. I was enrolled in, you know, ballet and tap at three. And I did different church shows mostly. But when I was six, I was in a community theater production of Oliver. I played an orphan.
Aww.
Really, that was my first introduction to musical theater, being in musical theater at least. And that really set me off. And I performed all through, you know, elementary school, grade school. And I went to a theater arts school. I begged my parents to let me go to this performing arts school at night. And so I started that when I was eight and did that until I was 16. So that's really where it started for me, was in performing.
And when did you start to realize, or was it more of a moment or like a gradual thing, realizing I think I need to do this for the rest of my life as my career?
Well, I definitely said, like, as early as like six or eight, I was like, I'm going to be an actor. I'm going to be a famous musical theater person on Broadway. So theater was always what it was going to be. It's definitely how theater has plays a role in my life that's really evolved over the years. But it's always been, like, since I was like six, it was always theater. But it was also usually theater and then also an art teacher or also a vet. So it was a lot of times it was also theater and something else, but it was always first and foremost theater.
Yeah. So like you say a teacher and a vet, so it was like always theater and helping people in a way.
I guess now that you say it, yes. But I mean, I think I also thought about being a florist in there and like other all sorts of things. I always had a backup. I always had a second mm-hmm. career. But I always wanted theater to be the first thing.
Mm-hmm. So when the time came for you to pick your college major and to do this in a more formal way, you have a Bachelor of Arts and your undergrad in theater studies and recreation. So what was it about a BA program that you felt suited your needs as an artist?
So I started to transition more into like the creative side of theater when I was in high school. When I was a sophomore in high school, I was one of the finalists in the Eugene O'Neill Theater Company's, the Eugene O'Neill Center's Young Playwrights Festival. Mm-hmm. And so I got to go and see one of my short plays be performed. And I got to watch a director working on a short play and kind of be behind that table for the first time. And that was really when I went, oh, I think I like playwriting and I think I like mm-hmm. directing. And like, there's this whole other world that I haven't really gotten to see because I've always been on the stage.
Yeah.
And so that's really when getting a BA evolved for me. I decided around then, because before it was going to be a BFA musical theater. And then mm-hmm. somewhere around 16, I was like, no, I think I want to do a BA so I can study different things. And I knew I always wanted to do, I knew from like high school on, I wanted to do theater for social change. Mm-hmm. So knowing that I could somehow supplement the theater for social change aspect with maybe a minor or another major was really important to me once that became a huge part of my theater identity and my theater goals. So around high school is when that shifted.
Interesting. Okay. So let's move into a little bit talking about the thing itself. So you arrive at university, step into the beautiful halls of Dillingham Center at Ithaca College. what was your initial reaction? Was college like the movies?
I mean, in some ways yes, and in some ways no. I didn't expect all the separation, I think, between some of the majors at times. Mm-hmm. I didn't fully anticipate that, but in a lot of ways, yes. I mean, Ithaca specifically is really interesting in our whole, if you're applying and you haven't gotten in yet, or you're trying to go to Ithaca, close your ears for a minute, our whole Bigs and Little program. Mm-hmm. I think that makes it a little more like a movie in a way, than other theater programs. Yeah. It's this weird, like additional semi fraternity sorority, but not really that sort of aspect. So I think mm-hmm. in that way, it made it feel more like a movie. I remember being in that first meeting where you find out that you have a big and just being like, what is going on? It was overwhelming. It was magical. It was a lot of different things.
It's very overwhelming.
Definitely. So in that sense, that was when I was like, oh, maybe this is more like the movies than I thought. Being the youngest of three kids, and all that, I thought I knew it wouldn't look like the movies. And then it was almost a shock that it was a little more like the movies when I got in. But I mean, I think that fades. I think there's always mm-hmm. magic when you first enter a new space, especially as a new person, as mm-hmm. a person with less experience around so many people with so much more experience. I think there's always more magic, and that always kind of fades a little bit as you understand everything rather than just the surface level.
So what kinds of things did you end up discovering about yourself during that time?
I discovered more and more that I'm an introvert, and that's okay. I think, well, I know that you probably remember me telling you this when you were a freshman. I mm-hmm. told you, you will never regret not going to a party. You might regret mm-hmm. going to a party, but you're never going to wake up the next day and, for the most part, and go, oh, I wish I went.
Yeah.
You know,
and nobody really cares if you didn't go to that party either.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So, you know, learning that, and learning that I didn't need to go to the parties, and that was fine, and that I would find friends who also would rather, you know, have a couple glasses of wine and watch a really bad movie and make fun of it. So I found my people in that sense and understood that, like, I didn't have to, just because I was a theater artist, I didn't have to be always social and always partying and all that. And that was a really important thing for me to discover.
Yeah. I think what can be hard to adjust to is going into a theater major is that you are on all the time. Like, you are your public self. Like, even if you're not a performance major, you're always performing for other people.
Absolutely.
Especially when you first get there, and you have to really find that balance between who you are in public and who you are in private, because it can be exhausting. And that's why people burn out.
Definitely. It definitely can be. And so learning that balance was really important to me, and learning that I am not any less of an artist just because I need more time to recharge. I think that was a very important lesson for me to learn.
Mm-hmm. It's so important. So you're doing this program. You've kind of got this recreation studies minor that you're doing on the side. Was the direction that you wanted to go with your art and with your work, was that encouraged by your formal education, or was that more of a path that you ended up carving out for yourself?
I think a little bit of both. The BA definitely encourages you to seek outside education beyond your major, beyond theater. So in that sense, I was definitely encouraged. The ICC does encourage you to do different classes.
The ICC is our, like, core requirement of classes that everybody has to take, just for people that aren't familiar.
Yeah, and you have to do either, like, a second major, a minor, or, like, a selected suite of classes. So it kind of forces you to go outside that bubble. So in that sense, yes. In other ways, I think I discovered a lot of it on my own. I started out as a double major. I entered as theater studies, and in the first semester added a culture and communications major. That eventually changed. I don't know. Is now a good time for me to talk about my weird journey and different majors throughout?
Yeah. Tell me about it. Yeah. Cause that's the whole point of this, is to show that not everyone's education is the same. So let's talk about it.
Mine was very different. And this kind of gets into how I ended up in the career that I'm in. So I knew I wanted to do theater for social change. I knew I was very interested in directing. I was interested in playwriting, and wanted to do that as well. So I had the double major in culture and communications. Second semester of my freshman year comes along, and I suffer a severe mental health crisis. I had been severely depressed and had extreme anxiety for most of high school, and I just kind of never dealt with it until I got into college. But I found myself hospitalized my second semester of my freshman year for suicidal ideation. When I was in the hospital, I had a therapeutic rec specialist come up to me, and this recreational therapist said, "What do you do for fun?" And I said, "Well, I'm a theater artist." And she said, "Isn't that what you do for school?" And I said, "Yes, but it's what I love more than anything in the world." And she went, "Then that doesn't count. This is now what your work is, and you need stuff other than theater to take space." And she looked at me and she said, "What else do you do?" And I said, "Well, I play guitar." And she went, "Nope, because that serves your theater and your artistry. What else?" I said, "Well, I paint." And she said, "Oh, cool. When was the last time you painted?" And I went, "Seventh grade." And it really made me realize that I had not enjoyed real recreation since I was, like, a preteen, because my life was so consumed by theater. And I love theater, and theater still brings me more joy than anything else. But when it is a job, when it is your school life, you need to have other ways to relax. And so this conversation with this recreational therapist made me realize, like, this huge hole in artist's life in particular, where artists are like, "Well, I do what I love, so that's what I do." And it's like, no, you still need to take a break sometimes. You still need to take time to do something else, something that doesn't. So I paint now. I do not have to be good at painting. It is one of the only art forms I don't have to be good at, and I love it. I love that I can suck at it.
thing that I draw, that's my thing. And I was so scared. I hadn't drawn, like you said, since middle school, because I was so I'm not good at drawing, so what's the point, you know? But now, like, I started doing it again during quarantine. It's like, oh, it's okay if I'm not good at this because I have fun.
It's so freeing. And especially if you're an artistic person, it's really nice to find like the one thing where it's like, oh, no one gives a crap if I'm good at this. This doesn't impact anything. And it's amazing. So I'm so glad to hear that you found that. Mm-hmm. So that really started my interest in therapeutic rec and in finding theater that is emotionally safe, finding using theater as therapeutic rec, kind of anything in relation to both therapeutic rec and artistry. So I decided to drop my second major in culture and communications, and I created my own major through the integrative studies program at Ithaca mm-hmm. College, and it was called Art and Media. It was called Art and Media for Social Change, and it explored how art and media impacts and creates social change on the individual level. So exploring through therapeutic rec, and then on kind of the macro level, how it can create social change in a broader scope. So I created this major, used some of the classes I'd already taken through culture and comm. It got approved my second semester, my sophomore year, and I was super excited. And then I get a call the summer before my junior year of college. And it's from, I believe she was the associate dean of the Hughes School of Humanities and Sciences. And she goes, Corinne, I am so sorry. Your major got approved. I wasn't there that night, and it was approved using former old guidelines. And
Oh my God.
Yeah. So I'd already been taking classes for my whole sophomore year. I was taking classes anticipating I'd be going into this new major I was creating. It'd been approved. Mm-hmm. It has to go through like three levels to get approved. Mm-hmm. And so I have all these classes I've taken that don't count towards anything. I'm told that all my plans I had made for the last 2 years, like they won't work. I'll have to take probably three more classes, maybe do an extra semester. If I do summer and don't go to London, there's an amazing London. Yeah. If you don't go to London and you do an extra semester and maybe do summer classes, you'll graduate on time. And I went, I can't afford that. I can't do that. And I was really upset. And they felt for me, which I really appreciated. They were like, you know, we messed up. So the first thing I said was initially I said, you know, please go tell me what needs to change about this and bring it back, because I put in a year of work and I was using the guidelines I thought was right. So please, you just tell me what I need to do, which is when she came back and gave me all those extra classes and all that stuff. So I was like, I can't do that. And you know, at this point I'm like spiraling, because I'm like, everything I've worked for the past 2 years, like it's gone. I'm not going to have a second. Like what am I going to do? Do I change my second major back? Do I drop it? And she says to me, she says, well, what do you actually want to do? And I tell her that I want to do theater and therapeutic rec. And she asked me, you know, like, what's your long-term goal? And I was like, well, I'd love to open a theater company for social change that does therapeutic recreation with people overcoming trauma. Like, that's what I really want to do. And mm-hmm. we do theater that both helps people through their own trauma and can help the community. And so she's looking at kind of what I've done. And she went, well, I think if you just declare a minor, which you're already halfway there, if you declare a minor in recreation, there isn't a therapeutic rec, but you can like focus on therapeutic rec and minor in recreation, you can do what you need to do. You'll have the education you need.
Yeah.
And that terrified the heck out of me, because like I said, I always wanted to do a second thing. And that was part of what my parents really encouraged me, like, hey, if you're going to do theater, also maybe get a degree in teaching, get, you know, do something mm-hmm. to supplement it. So, you know, and that bed my life for, gosh, now we're saying about 14 years. If I started when I was six and I'm now like 20, and I'm just like, what do I do? And I decided to take the leap and just do the minor. And I got so much hands-on experience from all of my mm-hmm. therapeutic rec classes. Like, it was insane. I did more internships with my minor than I ever did with my major.
Wow.
Yeah. So it was really great. And I'm really glad that I chose it. And it worked out really well for me, because I told I told a colleague what I wanted to do and what my end goal was the summer before my senior year. And that colleague said to me, hey, there's a company 20 minutes from where you grew up that does exactly that.
Yeah, that was my next question, actually, was how you ended up finding ArtReach.
Oh my gosh, it was kind of kismet in so many ways. Like I said, I was doing a theater festival. I was directing, and a local playwright was in it. That playwright, Cato McNichol, I will thank Cato until the day I die. Cato said to me, hey, there's this theater company that wants to do, that does exactly what you want to do. And they've been doing it since, you know, the 80s. And I was like, what, really? And she said, yeah. When you're getting ready to graduate, you know, send me an email and I'll see what they're doing. And so in my mind, I was like, okay, well, you know, maybe I can even just get like a part-time job with them or volunteer with them, get in with them somehow. So yeah. I emailed them in February, and I get an email back from Rebecca Atkins, the executive director of ArtReach. And she says to me, perfect timing. We're looking at restructuring right now. Can we talk in the next week or two?
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. And they created a full-time position for me as their event coordinator. I also do theater. I'm the head of their recreation program for ArtReach. So I do kind of like event coordination, theater, and then just overall recreation. And I interviewed in February. She said, we're going to make something happen for you. In March, I went to the office for the first time on my spring break. She said, yeah, I think probably full time. And then I started working a week after I graduated from college.
That's so fantastic. Wow.
I'm very lucky. And I've maintained my job throughout this whole pandemic.
Yeah, that's true. You've been able to keep working, which I think this moment right now, people really, really need the things that you guys do over there.
Thank you.
So now that you're a little bit further removed from your formal education, your university education, what do you think you would change about this system if you had, you know, infinite money and infinite resources?
That is such a hard question. I've been thinking about it for several weeks since you asked me to come on this podcast, but it's still such a hard question.
Yeah.
I wish that there was more space. Space is always kind of the thing that I go back to. It was always just such a difficult thing to get like a rehearsal space or a place to perform. So that's a big thing. You know, when I was going into IC, No Bucks was still a thing that was advertised. I don't know if you've heard of what No Bucks is.
No.
I'm not going to describe it super well, most likely, because it was kind of like still existed as I was applying and then was gone my freshman year. Basically, Studio 2, the Black Box at Ithaca College, was kind of like a space for the BAs to do shows and to do more
things.
Yeah. That's my understanding and how they explained it. And there were quite a few of us in my year, especially, who were very interested in that concept. It was called No Bucks because you didn't get a budget, but you got a space.
Yeah.
And imagine just having that small black box to do shows. Now that that place is incorporated in the season a lot more, which is in many ways is great because it gives more formal opportunities, but it takes away a lot of the informal experimental stuff. That's kind of my whole thing. I wish that there's more collaboration between the majors and that there could be more use of ensemble actors. Like, you know, I love what was done with the incubator in my final years at IC, having kind of like, oh, here's your pool of actors. And
and it's grown so much too,
which is amazing. That's so amazing to hear, but more of that. I would love for more of that to happen for, like you said, more chance for play. Play wasn't encouraged as much as I wish it had been during my college experience. In fact, directing before your junior year was highly discouraged. And, you know, that, I mean, any directing project I did early on was a huge learning experience, but that's what it was. And I was happy that I got to do that before before I suddenly had to be doing it for a grade or for rehearsal and performance, or it was nice to do it in that sense. And it was often discouraged in a lot of ways. I mean, simply from, you know, when you cast people having to fill out endless forms, and that's gotten better in my time. Mm-hmm. It's my understanding that that's a little easier now, but you know, when
it's
I started,
not as bad as it used to be.
Yeah. So, you know, stuff like that. I wish there was the ability to collaborate, more of a space to collaborate. That would be my big thing, is just encouraging people to play and experiment. Because that's, to me, college, and especially your undergrad, is when you should be doing that. It's when you're figuring out who you are as an artist and what you do. And if the stakes aren't as high, so if you screw up, great. If you aren't allowed to direct, like truly direct, until your graduate program, then suddenly you're teaching people. You're most likely in a teaching position, and you're taking these risks and failing and impacting undergrad's education, your own education. It's so much more high stakes. That's not fair to me.
And sometimes you gotta bite off more than you can chew sometimes, because you don't know how much you can chew until you try it, at least.
Exactly. So that's a big thing. I wish we had been encouraged to take risks and play like that, because what's the worst that can happen? You mess up and you have to go talk to a mentor and say, this was a disaster. And they can say, okay, let's talk about it. Instead, I was scared. If I messed up at an outside project, I was like, oh, they don't want me doing outside projects, really. So I can't go and like debrief about this with faculty or anything. I was kind of like, well, this is something I'm doing totally on my own. I probably can't ask for advice from the faculty. I'm just going to try it and see what happens, maybe. And they were all great learning experiences. And I really, really wish more people had been able to do that and do things like that, because there's only a few outside projects a year. All of my outside projects, you know, the stuff that I did with Audrey still marks, Audrey Lang, is still like some of the best stuff I've gotten to work on. And a lot of it's the highlight of my performing career, and highlight of my directing career. And we still collaborate outside of college. Yeah. And like, if we hadn't just been like, hey, like, do you want to direct this thing I'm workshopping, blah, 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 we would never have worked together as a playwright and director if we hadn't done stuff outside of the curriculum.
Yeah.
So.
And now you've worked together in professional rooms too, and professional workshops.
Exactly. So, you know, I got a lot of value out of that. And I just hope people do that. And it sounds like IC is going in a positive direction towards that. I really hope that continues.
Mm-hmm. And my last question for you is, what advice you would give to people trying to decide what kind of education is right for them?
I would say figure out what makes you kind of tick, in a sense. What, you know, so like I said, I always knew it was theater, but there was always something else too. So what is that extra special thing with theater that you like? Do you really love research? Are you obsessed with specifically dresses from the 1940s? What is your very specific thing in theater? Because it's amazing to become like a semi-expert, or, you know, whatever, an armchair expert around some random thing. But find that, because it's really great when you kind of find something that makes you gel and makes you understand more so where your place in the theater world is, because it's a big world and it's an intimidating world. But sometimes if you can just say, like for me, it was therapeutic rec. If you can say, okay, you know, there's a lot in here, but maybe if I'm good at making actors feel safe, and maybe if I'm good at telling people to take a break, and maybe if I'm good at directing theater where we talk about what's good and what's bad in the outside world and the inside world during it, then maybe that's what I can do and be good at. And maybe that's how I can help the theater world, because no one can do everything. And you're going to, you're going to spin yourself out over and over again if you try to be good at everything in theater. So find that thing that makes you tick, and find what makes your heart sing, and do that and gravitate towards it. And don't be afraid if that takes you away from the rest of the theater crowd, because that's okay.
Yeah. That is so beautifully phrased. Thank you so much for that. I think a lot of people really need to hear that.
Thank you.
I actually lied. I do have one more question for you. It's important research for a long-term project.
Okay.
So I have this theory that 90% of theater artists will have had this experience. So Corinne, Jenny, Esty, have you ever been associated with a semi-traumatic production of the musical Annie?
Yes, I have.
Are you in a place where you feel you can share your experience?
Aforementioned theater company I went to at night would do it like every 3 years. They still do, I think. They're a kids theater company. What are they going to do? But man, I was like, it was this weird thing. I was like a rehearsal swing 1 year when I was like nine, because I was in the school and they'd rehearse like during our hour long acting class. They'd also do rehearsals if they're in the show, but I wasn't in the show. So like if someone was out, I was just kind of there because they had to do something with
me. Just have a body. Yeah.
Yeah. They like had like Corinne wasn't in the show, but Corinne's in the class. So what do we do with Corinne in the class? but then when I was, I think 14, I was in a production of Annie. And I was Lily St. Regis.
Wow, that's fun.
Yeah. So, yeah, I won't go into it more than that, but there's been a lot of Annie in my life.
Yeah, I think that's a good picture of it. Thank you for sharing. You're very brave.
Thank you.
And thank you for joining us on the podcast. Where can our listeners find more about you and your work?
Thank you so much for having me. You can follow ArtReach at ArtReach Heels on Instagram or on Facebook. You can also find what I'm doing sometimes with Be Well Productions, both on Facebook as well. And you can find me at Corinne Jenny Esty on Instagram or on Facebook.
Lovely. And as for us, you can find the podcast on Instagram at The Rehearsal Report. Do you have any questions for people making cool theater, or are there any guests that you would like to hear from? You can email us at therehearsalreport@gmail.com. If you like what you hear on the podcast, please leave us a little review. It really helps us a lot. Thank you so much for joining us and listening today. And never forget, whoever you are, wherever you are, theater is not an impossible career, and you are never alone in this crazy dream, I promise. We'll see you next week.